My name is Hillary Johnson, and I am the Director of Field Operations in the Division of STD Prevention with the Massachusetts Department of Public Health. Today I'm going to be talking about the evolution of our internet partner notification activities in Massachusetts and how IPN is a viable tool for locating and notifying sexual partners of exposure with the goal of providing referrals for medical evaluation in situations where there's no other partner contact information besides a screen name. So today I will very quickly discuss how we came to the realization that we needed an IPN program in Massachusetts, talk a little bit about some of the key features of IPN, and some challenges that we have with IPN in the traditional DIS landscape, as well as our program successes since we've actually implemented this program. So in Massachusetts, over the last decade, as we began to see our infectious syphilis cases rising, particularly among MSM, we began to more closely examine the risk factors determined in our DIS interviews with index cases, looking for a pattern or anything that stood out that would help us in addressing rising disease rates. So nothing really stood out to us except for one activity that really we hadn't been paying attention to before. We found that in Massachusetts, approximately 49% of interviewed MSM syphilis index cases reported using the internet to find sexual partners. It became immediately apparent that we needed to adjust some of our interviewing techniques and subsequent partner notification activities to address this trend. So in 2006, we formalized our first official internet partner notification protocol. Now, in the traditional DIS landscape of partner notification, you start out with the goal of obtaining as much contact information as possible for the index client. And when various pieces of that puzzle are missing, it's up to the DIS to fill into the gaps with a few core nuggets of critical information. But when that information is missing and the DIS is left with no identifiable characteristics, the contact is classified as a marginal partner according to our DIS handbook. So marginal partners are those partners for whom insufficient information has been elicited to initiate investigation. And DIS programs try really hard to link marginal partners to actual partner identities, but it doesn't always work. And so we often lose these partners. So being able to collect and act upon an internet screen name when nothing else is available can be a saving grace. So before, maybe you only had the description of white guy, average build, came over to my place, I don't know where he lives or what his number is, I met him on the internet, from your index client. But if your program actually does internet partner notifications, it is also helpful to find out that his screen name is sexy guy 44, and his profile is located on a site like manhunt.net. So screen names can be that missing piece of information you actually need to do disease intervention, which is the whole point of why we're here to begin with. So there are some key features of IPN programs, including the fact that using a screen name is usually the last option. If I have an address and a phone number for a partner, I'm probably going to use those first. But that being said, once we do go online for a notification, we have a series of standardized approved messages that we utilize. And that helps us to not start from scratch with every single notification that we do, and also assures us some quality control. But the key point with our standardized messages is that even though we are sending exposure notifications to partners on the internet, our ultimate goal is to identify who the partner is so that we can verify disease intervention. And we do that by applying a carrot approach to encourage communication with the DIS. So how does it all work? Well, the DIS logs on to a designated health department profile on a site such as Manhunt and sends a message to the screen name we have listed for the partner. Now, in summary, the messages describe who the DIS is and their role, notifies the partner about generic exposure to an STI, and this is the key here. The message also instructs the partner to call the DIS for more information about the specific infection they have been exposed to and where they can go for testing and treatment. So the carrot is to contact the DIS for more information about the specific disease that you've been exposed to. So ideally, the partner calls the DIS back, obtains the disease-specific exposure information, and the DIS offers to help the partner get in for testing and treatment, at which time it is usually natural that the partner will disclose their identity to obtain assistance in getting into a clinic. So That's the ideal situation. Of course, it doesn't always happen that way. Sometimes the communication stays online and the identity of the partner is not revealed. Like I said, we utilize a carrot and not a stick. So we hope that they call us. but they can still get more information by communicating with the DIS online. So that can still be an appreciated exchange of information and may lead to medical examination. They may even tell us their test results. We just cannot confirm or verify them because we don't have an actual name or date of birth to go off of. And of course, try as we might, we may still never be able to confirm communication with a partner at all in some situations. We may send a message and never hear back. The partner may choose not to communicate with us at all, and they may have never just received the message due to spam filters or not logging on or what have you. And that does happen as well. Not only can we not confirm identity in medical evaluation, but we can't confirm that they got our message to begin with, which is why if you have an address or a phone number, you're going to try and utilize those first before you go online to contact a partner. So in actuality, internet partner notification is kind of a simple concept, but it's not without its challenges in the traditional DIS landscape. So we've encountered difficulty regarding traditional DIS field record disposition codes that don't reflect the realities of the internet. And we are also hindered by some of the limitations in STDMIS, which is CDC's traditional DIS case management information system. So one of the biggest challenges for DIS is utilizing these traditional disposition codes for the field work. These codes were developed with the idea that you can verify end results of all the partners you investigate. So if a partner goes to the doctor, tests positive, and is treated, well, you call up the doctor and you verify that they went in and you give them a C disposition of infected brought to treat. Or if the partner tests negative and receives preventive treatment, you call up the doctor and you verify that they did that and you dispo them a preventive treatment. Now, what happens when sexy guy 44 says, thanks for the info, I went to the doctor, I tested negative, and I got the preventive medication? So I can't really call around to all the doctors and ask if sexy guy 44 came in. So by traditional standards, I'm left with the J disposition code of refused examination or maybe an L other, depending on how specific your location or your jurisdiction is. So we developed our own internal disposition codes for our own records. And even though we utilize the traditional DIS less flattering disposition codes for STDMIS when we're doing our work in that. We also have had to, like a lot of other states, come up with our own external databases for screen names to keep track of them, because STDMIS just really isn't very good at that. Despite all of these challenges, we've actually had some real program successes with this program. In 2008, the Massachusetts Department of Public Health performed approximately 133 internet notifications. And of those, 39 or 29% received a DPH documented medical evaluation and appropriate follow-up. So that means we sent a message online, they received the information, they communicated back to us, they got the specific disease that they'd been exposed to, somehow disclosed their identity, and we were able to confirm that they went to the doctor and had some sort of follow-up. An additional 37 or 28% responded to communication with the DIS, received STD exposure information, and or indicated that they would be seeking medical evaluation on their own. So these are individuals we sent an email to, they somehow responded or got more information. They may have even said, hey, thanks for the information, I'm going to my doctor. And they may have even told us their test results. We just weren't able to verify that because we never found out who they were beyond their screen name. So all of these are partners that would not have been contacted about their exposure without our IPN program. And of course, that still leaves us with 57 partners, or 43%, that we could not confirm that they got our message. Maybe they did read our message, but they didn't initiate contact with us, and they aren't on a site where we can tell that they read the email. Or maybe they actually didn't get it. So there's no way to verify that what their care-seeking behaviors were after we sent the messages. Of course, that still leaves us with 76 partners, or 57%, that received the notification of their exposure. And once again, all of these would have been considered marginal partners, and no one would have received this information if our program wasn't online. So in conclusion, I just wanted to kind of reiterate the fact that a large number of MSM are meeting sexual partners online, and states should really make sure that their DIS programs include some form of internet partner notification. The alternative is really leaving a significant number of exposed partners with no information about their exposure. And just to kind of give you an idea of numbers, in 2007, we did 29 internet notifications. In 2008, we did 133. And in 2009, we did 182. So it's growing exponentially. Expansion of DIS partner services to include internet partner notification capabilities is critical to improvements in partner notification and follow-up in the age of the internet. So I just wanted to thank some of my colleagues, former and past, as well as some other individuals that have been very active on internet partner notification activities throughout the country. And of course, I think we all want to thank Al Gore, inventor of the internet. Where would we be without him? So that's it. Thank you.
Questions?
I was just wondering, what proportion of your total partners overall, some of those partners that you followed up via the internet?
I guess I haven't looked at that specifically. It's definitely growing. The question is, what percentage of our partners are internet partners versus not internet partners? I guess it depends. I want to say because when we get an internet interview, the numbers are so much higher. There may be 13, 15 partners related to that interview. That just tends to be how it works. It's one interview. If they're naming internet partners, chances are there's going to be a larger number of contacts named on that interview than another interview that where they have contact information, it probably wouldn't be as much. I want to say, this is just off the top of my head, maybe a fifth or something at this point. Yeah. Go.
So if you're in the back and forth by email, you're able to notify of exposure to HIV by email.
So the question is, can we let people know about HIV exposure over email? We recently in Massachusetts updated our protocol to also include HIV so that we could notify online related to that. The key is the language that we're sending out for the initial email. We say you have been exposed to a sexually transmitted infection, and that could be when they get back to us, we'll say it was HIV or it was chlamydia or it was something like that. We also have language in all of our emails that says, just because we're letting you know about chlamydia, that doesn't mean you're not at risk for other infections. And so when you go in, we do recommend that you get screened for chlamydia, syphilis, gonorrhea, and HIV. Yes?
Yeah, we do something like that in San Francisco, and we have for some time, but the messages we use are a lot more a lot less specific. Are you not concerned about the confidentiality of the communications and the potential for manhunt to be finding out things about the clients that the clients don't want them to know about?
That's a great. So the question is confidentiality and maybe even staff at manhunt figuring things out? Is that, or anyone in general? Okay, so we tailor our messages depending on the site. If I have an email address, I would not, because if it's just an AOL or a Gmail, we send a very generic, like our field visit letter of please contact me about an important health-related matter without, in our signature STD prevention or anything like that. If we are on a site like Manhunt that is for meeting sexual partners, we have an agreement with Manhunt, and we're a little bit more explicit in our emails because that's an online, that's the site where people are meeting people. And that's the screen names that we had, that they were met that way. So we try and tailor it according to the mode. And back there?
Did you come up with alternate dispositions?
I did have a list, and I actually didn't have time to explain them. The question is, do we come up with our alternate dispositions? And we did. They're kind of a combination of some other dispositions. So we utilize if someone reports an end result to us, we will, if they say they got preventively treated or infected, brought to treat or something like that, we would give them that C or that A. But if we don't know who they are, we'll attach an L to it, kind of indicating that we weren't able to communicate with it. In our STD MIS, we still end up dispoing it as an L. But for our own records right now, until something changes, we're also just keeping track of what the actual, differentiating ourselves, yeah. But again, it doesn't meet the protocols for reporting to CDC and our performance measures. So the question earlier about how our performance measures, our disease intervention index related to the internet, poo, it's bad, because you can't confirm these things. And so that's really frustrating, and there's no really way in SDMAS to account for these random scenarios where people are like, yeah, I got, thanks so much for the information, thanks so much, I went to the doctor, I'm taking care of it, but I still don't know who they are, so I can't verify it.
One more question, I think, and then we'll move on to the next presenter, but
I believe it's you.
Of the 39 documented cases that actually went in, you guys were able to do medical evaluation and follow-up, how many of those were diagnosed with the disease that they were notified for?
So how many of them were diagnosed? The question is, how many of the 39 that we know went in were diagnosed? I don't recall off the top of my head, so I'm sorry, I can't say whether or not they were actually C's. The majority of them were C's or A's, which means they either got preventively treated or they were infected, brought to treat. And actually, utilizing that, we can get you in for this magical thing called preventive medication, is kind of also a carrot to get people to give you their identity, so that you're like, we really want to get you in. You would benefit. You actually qualify. You could be incubating, and we can get you preventive medication. So, but I need to tell your doctor about that and make sure that they give you the right thing. And so that kind of helps facilitate that contact and figuring out who they are. If we can utilize that language, that definitely helps.
Thank